Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I think I am talking to you now. And if I'm not, well, you know, I'm used to that too. I just talk. Sometimes people listen. Welcome to the show. Today we are going to be talking about effortless change. And the numbers to call if you want to get in are from inside the U.S. and Canada, 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside of the U.S. and Canada, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as I said, the topic for today is effortless change. And those of you who've been around Hay House for a while, been around me for a while, probably know I have a program with Hay House called the Path of Effortless Change. And it was a program that we recorded over a few days with a live studio audience. And it was designed as a sort of an introduction to a whole new way of thinking about change, a whole new way of thinking about how change happens and why so often change seems challenging. It seems difficult. It seems stressful. It seems like something that we're going to have to work very hard at. And then when we actually come to it clean, it turns out to be quite the contrary. It turns out to be something that can happen effortlessly. Now, I talk obviously at length in the program about how that works, why that works, the principles behind that. What I wanted to share today is just something that I've seen since recording the program over the last couple of years, just another way of talking about the same ideas that has proven helpful when I've shared it with clients, and I'm guessing it might prove helpful if I share it with you. And I sometimes call it the cycle of effortless change. And it's sort of cyclical, but I'll explain what I mean. We are usually told what we should do. So we are being given a prescription. So that prescription might be to just meditate more, or think less, or think better thoughts, or do more of this, or do less of that. And, you know, you can substitute in your own specific prescriptions that you've got for what you need to do to change. And maybe you got them out of a book. Maybe you got them from a teacher or a coach. Maybe you just kind of intuited that this is what you should do, but you can't seem to get yourself to do it. And the reason that there's a few reasons that prescriptions are not that useful in helping us change. The first one is, often we take on a prescription that would have been perfect for somebody else, but just doesn't quite fit us. It would be sort of like if you were feeling unwell and you went to a friend's medicine cabinet and you just grabbed the first prescription bottle you found and took whatever was in there. I mean, there's a chance it might help, but the odds aren't great that it's gonna help with whatever's going on with you. And even if it does, there's likely to be some side effects that you're not thrilled with. So one of the problems with a prescription is, unless it is specifically for us, it's not necessarily for us. The other problem with it is most prescriptions for behavioral change, for doing things differently, for being different, are built on the idea that the agent of change is willpower, right? That if you have enough will, if you have enough willpower, you can make things happen. And you don't even need as much willpower as you think, because you only need enough willpower to create a new habit. So if you can just will it for 30 days or 45 days or 60 days or 90 days or whatever the cycle of habit creation that you've been taught is how it works, is necessary for the brain, then you can change. But willpower is by definition a limited substance. It's something that, yes, it gets renewed, but there's all sorts of research that shows that while willpower can be developed up to a point, it also gets used up very quickly. It's fast burning fuel. So willpower, not saying bad thing, certainly not a bad thing. Great for the first 30 seconds of a change process. Like, I was fascinated, my dad was involved in the space program, and I was fascinated to learn that most of the fuel, I think it's 95% of the fuel on board a rocket, is used in the first 30 seconds of launch. It's used in the just the very initial amount of time it takes for the rocket to break through the Earth's atmosphere. That takes all the effort. That takes all the will. The lion's share of the journey is not done through that fuel. It's done through different fuel. It's actually not even done so much through fuel. It just takes advantage of naturally existing forces like momentum and gravity. And then a little bit of fuel is used to kind of assist what wants to happen anyways. So that's why they designed space travel built on making minor adjustments. But the majority of the journey is going to be taken care of, as I say, by momentum and gravity. Well, it's similar for us. Willpower's great, but it really only helps you walk through the front door. It's not designed to get you all the way anywhere. So what is? What do you do if you've got a prescription? You think it would suit you. Like you might say, for example, let's say that prescription was, hey, you just need to settle down. You just need to quiet your mind. Oh, okay, I need to quiet my mind. Yeah, good point. Boy, I can really tell I would do better if my mind was quiet, because my mind's really noisy. I don't know if your mind's noisy, but my mind's really... Right? We probably recognize our version of that one. Well, if I try and do that as an act of will, then I'll probably get very mixed results. There may be times where I'm able to quiet my mind. I may do things or make lifestyle changes that I think will make it easier for me to quiet my mind. But fundamentally, it still looks like it's on me to quiet my mind, which means it's on my will, which means it's about effort, which means it's likely to be a struggle. And I may struggle and make it. I may struggle and not make it. I've known a lot of people who have dealt with, are dealing with various addictions. And it's always fascinated me that there are people who successfully deal with their addictions through white knuckling, just through every day doing enough to get through. And there are other people who something changes inside them. And it looks from the outside like it was effortless, like they didn't do anything to make the change. Well, that's because of how this cycle of effortless change looks. If you go from prescription to understanding, then the very thing that the prescription was telling you should do will be the natural effect of the understanding. So let's stick with our example of settling down. I'll go to the phones after this. So numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. Well, see, if I understand that the mind is the space inside which thoughts arise, that a quiet mind is not a mind without thought. It's the mind inside which thoughts arise and fade away. The classic example is a snow globe. Right? Your mind is not the snow. Your mind is the snow globe. And the snow, when we shake it up, is all shook up, and it makes it hard to see through the snow globe. But if we leave the snow globe to settle, the thought all settles at the bottom and we have a clear mind, a settled mind. Well, if you understand that's how the mind works, that the default is quiet, the default is settled, and the only reason it seems agitated so much of the time is because we're always thinking about stuff, then immediately you're able to experience it more because it's already there. There's no journey to take from a quiet mind to a quiet mind. It just looks like there's a journey because the snow might be all shook up in your head right now. The thinking might be spinning inside the mind. but the mind is perfectly settled. So I understand that, and my mind settles, my thoughts settle, simply because I get it. Now, if I see that I don't need my thinking to navigate life, and I don't know if that sounds crazy to you, but it's one of the most helpful things I've seen in 50 years of being on the planet, is you don't need your thinking to navigate life. There is something in us, a built-in guidance system, a knowing, a deeper intelligence that will guide us through life regardless of our opinions, regardless of what we know or don't know. It will continually point us in the right direction. And if we learn to follow it, we'll have an amazing unfolding. Not that everything you want will happen, because that's not how life works, but that more and more of the time, you'll find yourself happy and content with whatever happens. And because you don't have to think about it, you don't have to think about it. And when you don't have to think about it, the snow settles. Not because you tried to settle it, but because you realize, oh, I don't have to think about any of this stuff. This will all go up and down. I'll have all sorts of mental weather. And I can just carry on with my life, one step at a time, one day at a time, enjoying the moment and doing whatever it occurs to me to do to respond to whatever's going on in my world. So it will look like, oh my gosh, you settled down. That must have been so hard. Wow, I wish I had such a meditative mind as you. But actually, all that happened was the whole game looked different to you. You saw that you didn't need to think about anywhere near as much stuff as you thought you needed to think about. You saw that the nature of your mind was already still, was already quiet, was already settled. And without effort, without doing, you live in a more settled down mind. In fact, the original name of the program, The Path of Effortless Change, was Meditation Without Meditating. Because that's the effect. As you see how the mind really works, what we're really made of, what we're made from, this energy of life at the heart of all of us, we naturally live in a state of meditation more of the time. Not because we're working at it, because that is our nature. So I'll talk more about that as we go, but for now, let's go to the phones. Let's begin in Philadelphia with Priya. Priya, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, yes. I'm taking your online course right now, and I'm wondering, what can I do to just stay in that space within more and more? I used to do everything as hard work. I did it the prescription way, you could say NLP. And then a few years ago, things looked different. They looked kind of shimmery. But I didn't have anybody I could explain this to.
Mm-hmm.
I even went to an eye doctor. When they told me I was healthy, I was so relieved. But then I'm taking your class, and it says, when you see this shimmery stuff, hey, that is the space within that I'd been looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't put two and two together. Now I have them. But what do people do as a way of... I get your metaphor of the snow globe, but in everyday life, how can you stay there a little more?
So this is a perfect... first off, yay! A lot of what this conversation is connecting the dots with things that people have already experienced, but just had a misunderstanding about what it meant.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, all these years, nobody ever described it that way that you say in this class. There are many other explanations you give, and I went to a Hay House conference. You know, I was like working hard. I was trying.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So if the prescription... And I know you're not saying it that way, but I'm saying it that way just because then it fits my show theme and seems like I planned this, right? If the prescription is, okay, you need to stay in this place more. Well, if we get that the cycle is prescription understanding effect, then we got to look at, well, what is this space? How does it work? Well, this space as best I understand it, as best I've been able to explain it, is the space of pure consciousness. It is our nature, our deepest nature. Well, if that's who we are, then there's nothing we can do to be more of that. The experience that we have of going in and out now is not an experience of having it and losing it, which is the way most people think about it, and how do I have it longer? It's actually just an experience of our attention being drawn by other things and then returning home. Now, in and of itself, that's not problematic. Right? I have a friend who calls this space the filling station. Like a gas station. Because you fill up when you're in it. You fill up with good feeling. You fill up with well-being. You fill up with insight. But he points out that nobody would ever ask, hey, how do I make sure that I always stay at the gas station? Right? That's not really what gas stations are for. It's nice to know that in any moment you can wake up to the gas station, right? At any moment you pause for half a second and you're there filling back up. But you don't have to stay there. That's kind of not the point of life. So you get to marinate in the good feelings. You get to marinate in this space while living your life. And what will happen, because we're human and we think, is we will get caught back up in the movie of our life. We will get caught back up in the story. We will get caught back up in that for a while. And then there'll be a pause in our thinking. And we will find ourselves right back at the filling station, bubbling up, shimmering, filling up. And it will naturally, and this is, again, this is the great good news about the human condition. We will naturally return home more and more of the time when we see more of what home is.
Okay, yeah, I had not seen it maybe in a long time. When I started seeing it again, I didn't recognize it.
Yeah. And I know for me, like, I went from having some extraordinary experiences of this space that were great, and I tried to replicate and duplicate and hang on to and failed at all of that, to, and I tell the story in The Space Within, I don't remember if I tell it in the program, where like 18 months later, I realized, oh, I hadn't been in that space for 18 months.
Yeah.
But then, as I started to see, oh, this isn't an achievement. This isn't a space I can get to if I meditate hard enough. This is the default. This is my nature that I return to when I'm not chasing my tail somewhere else. Then it was only a year before the next time. And then it was 6 months. And then it was 3 months. And now it's very rare that I go more than a day or two without finding myself at the filling station. But that's not through effort. That's just as it's become more and more apparent to me what's going on. I more and more naturally find myself at home because there's less of a reason to leave home. I find myself in the moment more and more because there's less of a reason to leave the moment.
Wow. Okay. You know,
tell me a little bit about the wow.
Put it into practical.
tell me a little bit about the wow. What did you hear in that?
I did think of it as hard work, and that one day I would arrive. So I kept trying.
Yeah.
And it was there the whole time.
I know. That's why they call it the great cosmic joke.
Well, I genuinely remember when I went to an eye doctor. They told me I was doing well. I was so relieved. Yeah. I kept seeing that shimmery thing. Was like, but what about that?
Oh, you mean the after image of God? Yeah, no, we don't have any glasses for that one. Sorry. Very
okay,
cool,
well,
Priya.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And honestly, that's why I've been spending a lot of time lately working with people who are sharing this understanding with other people. So training coaches on Super Coach Academy and just being involved with other groups that are training facilitators in the three principles in the Inside Out understanding. And one of the things that's so comforting to know, that gives me such a confidence that doesn't come from hard work. It doesn't even come from experience. It comes from understanding. So if we take it back to our cycle of effortless change, the prescription version of this would be, well, you need to be confident. Well, once I started to see that, oh, people already know this space. They already know this at some level. They just haven't connected the dots. They haven't made the jump. They've bought into some alternative explanation that makes this look special or like an achievement or like a desirous place that would be better than all other places. Once you see how ordinary this space within is, this our natural health, our natural buoyancy, our natural well-being, once you see that we are made to marinate in loveliness, and we can do that at any time, and the second we start marinating in loveliness, all the crap goes away, right? You can't have both at the same time. You can't be marinating in loveliness and stuck in crap, just like you can't have light and be stuck in darkness. Light dispels darkness. Loveliness dispels despair. And so once you see that that's just how it works, there's nothing to do. And because you're not so busy doing stuff, you start to notice what has always been there. And so when I finish the story, so when I'm talking to all these people, these trainers, I say, we have a secret weapon. We are pointing to something that is really there. We're pointing to something that people already see. So even if we're terrible at pointing, there's a reasonable chance they'll see it anyways because it's actually there. It's not a belief system that has to be cultivated. It's not a way of being in the world that has to be trained and conditioned. It's just us as we are, life as it is. And because we now have a deeper understanding of how it works and how people change, we are naturally confident because it doesn't look like it's going to be down to our hard work, whether people get it or not. And again, that same cycle, we start with a prescription. I should do this. We go to a deeper understanding, and then we find ourselves naturally doing the thing that we thought we had to be prescribed. Let's go to California. And let's talk with Christine. Christine, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I have been in major crisis in my life for the last year or two, and the last year in particular has been really difficult. And I was with a therapist who I felt great connection with, and he moved out of the area, and so I just kept asking the universe to send me somebody who would be perfect for me. And, you know, there's resistance because I don't want to leave my old therapist. Again, he was just like my lifeline and my rock. So I did find someone, and I've started seeing her maybe, I think this was the third time this morning. And I don't know if it's the right person. She's so different than my old person, and she's having me go in directions that I'm not wanting to go in. And so I'm thinking, well, am I supposed to go in these directions? Is that why it feels so uncomfortable? Or I'm just really confused.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I get that. So I'm going to put some caveats around my answer before I answer, which is obviously, as I don't know you outside of this call and I don't know the therapists involved, I am not nor could make a recommendation of what to do, right? That makes sense?
Yes.
Having said that, I can point to some things that maybe will give you some clarity. So one is, what are you hoping to get from being with a therapist?
Clarity, healing, support.
Okay. So, and are you okay with me just asking some questions?
Yes.
Okay. So clarity around what?
My marriage.
Okay. And support. In what kind of support? Like, do you want somebody on the side going, go, Christine, like that kind of support? Or like, what are you looking for?
Guidance, I think, maybe is a better word. I need guidance, clarity and guidance, because I am just so unsure of what I want or what direction to go in, what to do, what to think, how to frame things.
So do you want somebody, and these are real questions, they might not sound like it, but they're real questions. Do you want somebody who is going to tell you what to do about your marriage and offer their clarity so that you can kind of go, oh, okay, that makes sense?
Or yes. Or,
yes. Okay, no, that's why I'm asking. All right. Here's the problem with that setup. Okay, so this is nothing to do with any individual you might work with. This is okay. This is just, you know, if a game is rigged, it doesn't matter how good you get at playing it. Right? It's like if a game is set up. So, you know the game Snakes and Ladders, Chutes and Ladders?
Yeah.
So that game, apparently, I looked it up at one point because I use it as a metaphor. And the original version of that game, there were more snakes than ladders. So okay. The game was rigged in a way that you would almost certainly lose.
Huh.
Then they made a new version as the worldview of the Western world progressed, where they put an even number of snakes and ladders. So it was kind of 50-50 whether you'd ever win. Like even if you played forever, it was still only 50-50 that you'd win. In the 20th century, they remade the game with more ladders than chutes, more ladders than snakes. So now the probability is you'll win. Might take longer than you'd like it to, but it's kind of, there's an inevitability to it. So that's an example of a game that's either rigged in your favor or rigged against you.
Uh-huh.
So going to somebody to tell you what to do is a game that's rigged against you. Because if they're right, you now are more reliant on them than you were before. And if they're wrong, you're screwed, and they don't have to deal with the consequences of that.
Uh-huh.
So the best meaning, wisest person in the world, if you follow them, because, well, they seem to know what to do. You lose or you lose.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I have a really hard time making decisions anyway, which is one of the reasons why I valued my old therapist so much, is because we viewed the world in a very similar way. He understands that I have trouble finding, you get what I'm saying.
I do.
He helped me a lot in that way, and his advice always resonated well with me. It never felt like, oh no, I don't agree with that, or that doesn't feel right.
So I'm going to make a suggestion that what that resonance meant is far more important than whatever advice he gave.
Yes.
That resonance is not him, it's you.
Okay.
And that resonance is what will guide you with a new therapist.
Okay.
That's what you can trust.
Okay. It's just, she's so different, and so I'm trying to be open to what she's offering me at the same time, even though it feels very uncomfortable right now.
Well,
because
and,
I don't know if it's uncomfortable because I need it and I'm resisting it.
But this is just my opinion now. I don't think we need anything. Right? We do all sorts of things because it's supposed to be good for us.
Yeah.
And some of it might be. But when we're doing it because we think it's good for us, that's bad for us.
I see. Okay.
So again, it's kind of simpler. Like there's something in us that, left to our own devices, is not going to eat cake 24/7. It's just not.
Right.
Right. And there's and that's the thing, is we're really not bad for us. Mm. Which means we don't need to do all these things that we think are good for us.
Okay.
Happy exploring, Christine. You're welcome to phone back anytime.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You know, it's such an interesting thing. I've had it. I tell the story sometimes, but I sat down with a potential new client once, and they got so worked up that I wouldn't tell them what to do, that at one point they actually stood up and screamed at me, "Just tell me what to effing do and I'll effing do it." And I kind of was taken aback, and I said, "I think the first thing you should do is fire me as your coach, because that's never going to happen." And it's not, here's the thing, I'm happy to give somebody advice if I don't think they'll take it because I'm the one giving it, right? There's a very interesting thing that happens, is when you're put in the role of expert, or you claim the role of expert, people give undue weight to your words. And I think it's those of us, kind of incumbent on those of us in positions of being coaches or therapists or gurus in whatever way we might be, to be aware that people read way too much into what they say. One of my favorite stories about Sid Banks, the Scottish mystic who first kind of coined the three principles as an understanding of how the mind works. He was driving through, so my friend knew him back in the day, and they were driving on the island, and Sid just casually commented one day that there was somebody selling like snakeskin luggage by the side of the road, and Sid said, "Snakeskin, that's the future." which, you know, was just sort of like a random comment, and my friend found it quite funny. Well, 6 months later, he was back out, and the other two people who'd been in the car with Sid and my friend had trashed their businesses and gone into invested in snakeskin, which turned out not to be the future. There's an inherent, I don't want to call it a risk. There's an inherent responsibility that comes with people listening to you, which is that you kind of got to do your best to not talk shit. And anyone who says they know the right thing for you to do, with the best will in the world, they're kind of talking shit, because how on earth would somebody else know? How can I tell you which shoes fit your feet best? I can make suggestions. I can say, "I think those shoes would fit." I can even make it easier for you to try those shoes on. But you're the only one who can tell me if they fit. I still have a pair of sneakers. This is it's actually an open wound. I didn't even know it till just now. But I was wearing it last night. I went to work out. I've got this pair of sneakers, and they convinced me they fit. And for a year, I've been kind of struggling with these sneakers that just don't fit. But they were so convincing at the shoe store, and they would know, right? They sell shoes. So I'm not saying I don't fall for it. I'm just saying I don't think it's a good thing when I do. So we can, because we get insecure, because it looks like other people have clarity and we don't, it's kind of natural to look to them and ask them, "Hey, what should I do?" Well, the answer is you should get clarity too. Right? I can drive around in a car covered in mud where I can't see out the windscreen, trying to follow the GPS and hoping I don't crash. Or I can take a minute to let the windscreen clear. And then I can drive on because I can see where I'm going. Now, even Christine said with her last therapist, she had a resonance, right? What do I mean when I said that resonance is what you're going with? That means there is something in her that does know. Right? One of my favorite tricks, the most shared blog on our website at the moment at michaelneal.org is a blog about decision making. And it's a blog about guidance. And one of the examples I give in there, and it's taken from the book Supercoach, which you can at all good booksellers and Hay House near you. And it's a simple exercise. And I ask people to think about a decision. And I ask them to pick, so you can do it now. Think here, we'll do this together. Think about a decision, okay? And think about whether, you know, one where there's two choices. And I'm going to flip a coin. And choice one is heads, and choice two is tails. So you decide which one is heads and which is tails. And you're going to abide by the coin flip. Okay, so if it comes up heads, you're going to do choice one. If it comes up tails, you're going to do choice two. Okay, now, just before I flip, what are you hoping for, heads or tails? Okay, now I'm going to flip. Okay, it was tails. Are you happy, relieved, disappointed? Now, I've done that hundreds of times, if not thousands, with people. And nearly every time, people have a sense before the coin flip of which way they hope it goes. And they have a sense of disappointment or relief, depending on which way it comes up. Now, that sense of, oh, I hope it's heads. I hope it's tails. Oh, damn it, it's heads. That lets you know. That's a way of touching that resonance in you, that knowing in you. That's always there. But it gets buried under all our good ideas. It gets buried under all our thinking about, well, yes, but I should do this. And, you know, it would be good if I did that. And so it's the same kind of thing as we've been talking about. So I say we hear a prescription and then try to do it instead of letting the prescription guide us towards an understanding that will have the effect of what the prescription was originally about in the first place. So let's say that somebody says to you, you know, okay, you know, I want to get better at decision making. You need to get better at decision making. Okay, that's my prescription. I need to get better at decision making. Well, try doing that. And if you've tried doing that in the past, you'll know it's something of a futile endeavor. However, if you understand decision making a little bit clearer, then it will become easier. You will become better at it because it won't look so complicated to you. So here's a few things that I have found unbelievably helpful in my understanding of decision making. The first is there's really no such thing as a decision. In other words, I either know or I don't know. And if I know, it's not a decision because I know what to do. And if I don't know, it's not a decision because I don't know. That's called a guess. So really, what we call decision making are those rare moments where we don't know, but we think we need to guess instead of waiting until we know. Waiting until we see what we already know. Waiting until we feel that resonance. Waiting until our windscreen clears and we see with clarity. Now, what's interesting is there are very few situations in life where you really have to make a decision before you know. It happens occasionally. But on those rare decisions, you may as well flip a coin because you don't know. So heads is as good a bet as tails. Now, another thing I've seen about decisions that makes them not seem like a complicated thing to me is you can pretty much handle the consequences of pretty much every decision you make. Now, are there exceptions to that? Yeah. We were watching the movie Free Solo the other day, and that guy who climbed the face of El Capitan without ropes, Alex, like, no, he could make some wrong moves that would be game over from a physical standpoint. But most of the decisions that we're making that feel like life or death, like where are my kids going to go to college, and is this the person for me to marry, and should I take this job or go out on my own? Those aren't really life and death decisions. If you want to see what a life and death decision looks like, watch Free Solo. We're literally one false finger and it's game over. Now, it feels like that to us, the decisions we have. But what we don't see is that all the thinking about, yeah, but what if this and what if that, that's the mud on our windscreen. And if you put that down, then the windscreen's naturally clear and it's easy to see. And if you know, you know. And if you don't know, you don't know. No problem. No decision. And that's the simplicity of it. Now, if you heard anything in that, if you saw any truth in what I just shared, if there was a resonance there for you, you just got better at decision making. No effort, no time, no practice. Now, you make some decisions with this understanding and you learn, you get more discerning. Right? There is a learning curve in life. Of course you get better if you do more of it. But you only get better if you do more of it with an accurate understanding. Otherwise, we start attributing magical properties to random chance. There's a beautiful book. It's one of my favorite books by Nassim Taleb called Fooled by Randomness. And it's just a kind of a, for me, it was thrilling to read. Because it just shows how many things in life that are random we attribute cause-effect to. Just how many things in life that we think, oh, it's a sign from the universe, actually are totally attributable to a probability curve. Now, that doesn't mean there's no cause-effect in the universe, or at least it doesn't mean that to me. It just means that I don't have to make up reasons for as many things as I think I do. I don't have to go, I was able to make this decision worked out because I did this, and that decision did not work out because I didn't do that, and this decision worked out because I listened, and this... It's simpler than that. Sometimes things work out the way you want, and sometimes they don't. Full stop. That's always going to be true. Now, I've been around for a while. I've even been in this world for a while. And I don't know anyone who everything works out as planned for. I know people who make the best of however it turns out. And they may say, yep, everything works out perfectly because however it turns out, I decide is perfect. Well, that works for me, right? It's actually a lovely recipe for a very simple life. Right? Shoot the arrow, and wherever it lands, call that the target. That's a fine way to live if you want to live that way. But it's not cosmically true. It's just a way of making up the game of life. And that's part of the beauty of it, is we are all making up the game of life. Very few of the rules we play by are built in, but there are a few. One is, nobody gets out alive. Right? That seems true. Okay? Another rule of the game is, it is entirely down to the individual in any moment whether or not they're having fun. There are no bits of the game that are inherently more fun or less fun. Fun is a choice. fun is the natural feeling that we feel, actually, when we're not focused on all our reasons that this isn't fun. I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they were telling me about this job that they did that they hated. And I asked them, why would they do that? Why would they hate the job? And they started to tell me why they hated the job. They gave me all the reasons. And I was like, no, that's not my question. Why would you want to hate the job? Well, I mean, I don't want to hate it. I just do. No. No, it doesn't work that way. Right? What makes us hate something is that we think hateful thoughts about it. Now, I'm not saying we do that on purpose, but that's us. That's not the job. It's possible for somebody else to be in the exact same job not hating it. In fact, there are inevitably days where you're in the exact same job not hating it. Hate is not a property of a job. It's a habit of thought. And often it's a habit that we get into because we think it will motivate ourselves to change. Right? If I just hate this enough, that will get me to change. There was a Jesuit priest named Bruce DeMarsico I quoted in You Can Have What You Want. And he said, human beings are the only animals who shit in their own nests to get themselves to move out. So we hate something because we think that will motivate us to change, not seeing that what it actually does is it means we marinate in hate. It means that icky feeling starts to contaminate everything in our world. It means that we're exhausted and we have no energy to even contemplate change, let alone doing anything different in the job we've already got, or in the marriage we've already got, or in the situation we've already got. What if you could love something and leave it? What if you could love something and move on to something else because it's just what it occurred to you to do? What if you loved something simply because it's easier, it's nicer, it's less effort than hating it, it's less tiring than hating it? What if you let yourself be in love with everything? It's certainly possible. Now, again, I am not saying you need to do this, you should do this. If you hear that as a prescription, fair enough. Love everything. All right, Michael Neal says I must love everything. Notebook. Well, what I'm actually saying is love and hate are qualities of mind, not qualities of the universe. And love is permanent. Love is the default. Love does not come and go. Thought comes and goes. And hate is made of thought. And life is made of love. That's just how it seems to work. One is real in the sense that it doesn't go anywhere. The love that we are, the life that we are, the aliveness that we are, the energy of life that is in all things, that is neither created nor destroyed, according to Newton, that is, in fact, according to Pope Francis, how it works, that there's no hell, that actually we just become part of, we disappear back into the oneness, the nothingness, the everythingness, the allness, the isness. I don't remember the word he used. So the form changes, but the energy doesn't go anywhere. That energy, that love is the feeling of that energy. That's why in A Course in Miracles it says, only love is real. Real in the sense that it can neither be created nor destroyed. Illusion is just that which comes and goes. That which is temporary by nature. It is temporal. It is of time. Infinite is that which is beyond time, outside of time. Sid Banks described life as a divine dream suspended between the boundaries of time, space, and matter. Once you make up time and you make up space and you make up matter, then you can have this game of life. But it is made up of light. It is made up of love. It is made up of mind. It is made up of infinite intelligence. It is made up of the one energy that we are all of. And so, if you want to love more, you're in luck. You're made of it. If you want to heal, you're in luck. You're already whole. You just think you're not. If you would love to have a different experience at work, it's theirs for your, it's yours for the taking. Because if you'll stop hating it, if you'll stop judging it, if you'll stop judging yourself for still being in it, what's left is love. And love does not mean you are stuck with it. Loving something doesn't mean you have to live with it. It just means you get to marinate in love. And the various places and forms and people you marinate in love with will change. It's probably a story I tell too often, but it was a big story in my life. I was being interviewed for a Swedish magazine, and they asked me what my 5-year vision for my life was. This was probably 10 years ago now. And I really thought about it. I hadn't thought about it for a while, and I realized, wow, I'm really happy and I love my life. So I said to them, look, my 5-year vision is that I'm really happy and I love my life. And I don't have a particular preference for what form that takes. Now, it's 10 years on, I can tell you, my vision came true. I'm really happy and I love my life. And I'm with the same family, different house, same basic job, but doing it with different people, different car, same, actually different dogs, right? The forms have changed because that's what forms do. But because I saw that what really mattered to me was being really happy and loving my life, turns out that doesn't have to change. Turns out you can have that anywhere. You can have that now. Doesn't mean you have to put up with something. I had somebody the other day say to me, well, yeah, I guess if people in prison can learn to be happy. But then it was like, yeah, but you're not in prison. You can just change your circumstances. Now, good to know that if there are any that you can't change or won't change, you can still be happy. Good to know that you can be free even in prison. Good to know you don't have to hate your life even if your circumstances aren't yet what you'd like them to be. But how cool is it that we can love our lives as they are and change them? That seems to me to be the ultimate freedom. Not just freedom of mind, but in many cases, freedom of movement. And it, in those places where we just don't have freedom of movement, because that's true too, well, we still have freedom of mind. We can still live in the love that we are, in the life that we are, and we can marinate in that loveliness. And that takes care of a host of ills. So, you can learn more about the program, Path of Effortless Change, and everything else that we do at michaelneal.org. And you can also find out more on Hay House Radio. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.